Welcome to my Soul Series. Soul Series is part of Oprah and Friends, exclusively on XM Radio Channel 156. And you can listen to the entire Soul Series collection on xmradio.com/Oprah. It's uplifting, enlightening, truly powerful. Welcome to Soul Series.
When I felt my spirit surrender, I said goodbye to my life, and my mind was now suspended between two very opposite planes of reality. Stimulation coming in through my sensory systems felt like pure pain. Light burned my brain like wildfire, and sounds were so loud and chaotic that I could not pick a voice out from the background noise, and I just wanted to escape. Because I could not identify the position of my body in space, I felt enormous and expansive, like a genie just liberated from her bottle. And my spirit soared free like a great whale gliding through a sea of silent euphoria. Nirvana. I found nirvana. And I remember thinking, there's no way I would ever be able to squeeze the enormousness of myself back inside this tiny little body. But then I realized, but I'm still alive. I'm still alive, and I have found nirvana. And if I have found nirvana and I'm still alive, then everyone who is alive can find nirvana. And I pictured a world filled with beautiful, peaceful, compassionate, loving people who knew that they could come to this space at any time and that they could purposely choose to step to the right of their left hemispheres and find this peace. And then I realized what a tremendous gift this experience could be. What a stroke of insight this could be to how we live our lives. And it motivated me to recover.
That's Dr. Jill Bolte Taylor, and that is the clip from the TED conference that's been traveling around the internet. Perhaps maybe somebody's already sent it to you if you hadn't seen it already. Dr. Jill Bolte Taylor had a massive stroke in 1996, in the left hemisphere of her brain. She remained conscious the entire time and was aware of what was happening. Later wrote a book called My Stroke of Insight. And last we were talking about when your mother arrived and instinctively knew that this is no longer my Harvard doctor brain daughter. Scientist doctor daughter, but this is my baby girl. And makes me just cry. I climbed into bed with you.
Beautiful.
Pulled back the sheets and climbed into bed with you the moment she saw you.
Yeah.
And then the road to recovery started.
Right.
And she also knew sort of instinctively, I guess, or did the doctor speak to her and tell her, never ask yes and no questions, only multiple choice questions?
She learned very quickly. She'd been a math professor her whole life, so she was used to teaching. Mm-hmm. And she just paid attention. She paid very clear attention that if she asked me yes, no questions, I didn't care. I'd yes or no. I didn't know what a yes or no was, and I had no idea what she was asking, and why would I want to make that effort to try to figure it out if I could just, like, yes or no her?
One of the things you had said, because the stroke was in the left hemisphere of the brain, the right hemisphere of the brain, which understands, you know, perception and insight and all of that, you only would participate with people or engage with people who you felt had your best interest. And if they didn't have your best interest, then you would shut down and not participate.
Yes.
So I think that's often maybe what's happening, you know, like a lot of people talk about, you know, working with people with disabilities and how angry they become or how whatever. I think that there's a level of them sensing why you're really here.
Right.
Or that you really don't mean me.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I was totally,
you don't mean good by me.
Right. Mm-hmm. And if I'm just the next thing on your busy schedule, why did you bother?
Yeah. And you could tell that immediately.
I could sense that immediately.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Just general interest. You know, people who are interested in care, they look you in the eye and they tend to you. They speak with you. They're gentle with you. They're kind. They're compassionate.
I think the word that you use is they respect you.
They respect you.
You sense even when you can't speak, you don't have the language for it.
Right.
And that's whether you are a baby, an invalid, or a dog.
Right.
You sense when people mean you well.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And what you shared with us before is that I'm in here.
That's right.
I'm in here.
Yeah.
I'm in here. How long were you in the hospital before you were released to the care of your mother, Gigi?
I was in the hospital for 5 days. So I was there for the first 2 days before she came. And she came on day three. Mm-hmm. And then I was there in the hospital for two more days. And then they had her take me home. And I had 2.5 weeks to get ready for surgery, for major surgery.
So going home, were you didn't know what a home was?
No.
You didn't know who you were?
No, I didn't. All I knew was I was getting in a car in downtown Boston.
With somebody named Gigi.
With somebody named Gigi who really didn't know how to drive there. I was a little terrified. Yeah. Yeah, I was
so
going
when you
home.
Went back to your home, went back to your home, were the things there familiar to you?
No, not in the beginning. Not in the beginning, I was just absolutely exhausted. I had no ability for input. I just wanted to sleep. And in the hospital, they don't really let you sleep. Mm-hmm. They wake you up routinely. They test your blood pressure, et cetera. They're giving you neurological exams. It's not a great place to heal. So when I got home, it was like I just wanted to go to bed and hibernate. I just needed to recover my mind.
Still no sense of identity. Still no,
right.
I am Jill.
Oh, no,
I
no.
You know,
no.
I'm a doctor.
No.
I live in this place.
No.
I own these things. None of that.
Nothing.
That.
Just give me a water bed and let me go to bed.
Yeah.
Yeah, and leave me alone.
So ego was still dead.
Oh, I was gone. Oh, yeah. I was gone for a long time. It was gone. I sat in an absolutely silent mind for the 2.5 weeks before surgery and then up to 2.5 weeks after surgery.
In a silent mind.
Silent. No brain chatter. No brain chatter telling me I am Jill Bolte Taylor, I am a neuroanatomist, these are my credentials,
I need to do this, and this.
Absolutely none.
Can you describe again for us what that silent mind is like? Was it lonely in there?
Oh, it was beautiful. It was beautiful. It was tranquil and peaceful, and I felt so whole and so enormous. And I would sit on my couch, and my mom would look at me, and I'd sit on my couch with this goofy grin on my face because I was alive. I was alive, and the colors and the environment, and it was stimulation, and it was fascinating, and I had these things, and even though nothing was functioning like it was supposed to, I was still alive.
And because there was no left brain functioning, no attachment to the ego, you didn't care what other people thought.
Oh, no, not at all. Not at all. Not at all. Made no difference to me.
Made no difference.
No, made no difference.
That's why you could be...
That was their stuff. I was so clear. I mean, one of the most beautiful things about losing the left hemisphere was I was so clear on what I was. I was a miracle. I was a miracle. Now, you might look at me and see me drooling and see me not able to sit up or to walk around and think, oh, judgment. Oh, poor Jill. Tragic, you know. And that's your stuff, honey. I'm in here going, oh, wow, I'm just like alive. So I was experiencing euphoria. I was sitting around with this goofy grin on my mm-hmm. face. I was a happy child.
Mm-hmm.
My mother would look at me and wonder, why are you so happy? She would say that to me. Why are you so happy?
Wow.
How could you be happy in this condition? And it's
right. And so it's
I'm alive.
It's our stuff. I think this is going to be the book is going to help so many people with dealing with, you know, children or family mm-hmm. members with disabilities because of our own stuff.
Right.
We look at them and feel, oh, poor thing.
You're projecting all your fears of what you think it would be like to be in my shoes, but you're not in my shoes. So I don't have any of the fear. And you have to remember, I'm still alive. I didn't die, whatever that experience would have been. But that didn't happen to me. And so for me, this was not a bad state of being.
Even though you're drooling.
Even though I'm drooling. Even though I have no hygiene care. I have no ability to take care of myself. Somebody's feeding me. It didn't matter. What mattered was I still had life, and I was still capable of honoring my own life, whether anybody else could did or not didn't matter, because I did, and I knew that I was the life force power of these cells. And okay, so some of the cells weren't working, but most of them had the potential. Yeah, no, I was fine. I was absolutely, I was perfect and whole and beautiful, just the way that I was. That was my perception. And so were you. So you know, people would come, and I was very fortunate that Gigi didn't become depressed. Gigi didn't become negative. She didn't become critical of me or of herself. She was just riding a ride.
Gigi, your mom.
Gigi,
yeah.
The mom, uh-huh. in order to bring me what I needed and to provide for me hour by hour by hour what I needed in order to take the next step.
You say, Ed, there's a passage in the book where you talk about so many times when people are dealing with folks who've had neurological, you know, disabilities or been, you know, dysfunctional in some way, strokes or whatever, that stroke patients become hopeless, mm-hmm. because
nobody's paying attention to the little differences. And I don't have the cognitive capacity to remember what I couldn't do last week. All I have is what can I do today.
So give us an example of what you mean by little differences.
Oh, even being able to stay awake for longer periods of time,
yeah.
Or to be willing to stand up and walk to the bathroom or to be awake for instead of sleeping for 6 hours,
mm-hmm.
sleep only 3 hours and have a little bit of alertness. Just every step along the way was Gigi was on the phone with her friends, sharing our triumphs day by day by
uh-huh,
day.
Uh-huh. The littlest thing, being yeah. able to hold the pen today.
Oh, hold the
and
pen
yesterday
today.
You couldn't hold the pen.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Being able to
I could pick up puzzle pieces today and hold them because my hands were so
yeah,
weak.
Yeah, share the moment where she gave you that 12-piece puzzle.
Oh yeah. So it was a toddler sized 12-piece puzzle, and she says to me, okay, she showed me the picture on the front and said, this is the picture that we're going to make, and didn't really make any sense to me, but okay. So then we open it up and we dump out all the pieces, and she says, okay, I want you to turn all the pieces right side up. And I'm going, okay.
What is right side up?
Yeah. What is right side up? And so she showed me the difference, and it was like, okay. So I did that, and you have to remember that at this point, any cognitive energy, thinking takes work. Thinking takes a lot of energy, and I didn't have any energy. I had a tiny little amount compared to what normal living was. So every effort was an enormous effort, and I had to either make the choice, yes, I'm going to try, or no, I'm not going to try. And again, because Gigi was so comforting as a caregiver, I would show up for her.
Mm-hmm.
And so then she said, okay, pick out all the edges.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, what's an edge? Showed me an edge.
What's an edge?
And so
I'm looking
out
here because I love it when you said trying to try is everything.
The willingness to try
is everything. The willingness to try
was
everything.
Because then when I try, it's me saying from the inside to my brain, to my neurons,
mm-hmm.
I value this connection.
Mm-hmm.
I value it enough to try.
Yeah.
And if I don't try, it may never come back because I'm not willing to make that effort.
So, and there's a moment where you're doing the puzzle, where she says, use color as your guide.
Right.
And that had never occurred to you.
It had never occurred. I was obviously, she did say, these are outsy pieces, these are insy pieces, look at size differences.
She had to explain to you what an edge was.
She had to explain everything to me. Parts and how they would fit together. And so I'm obviously trying to put pieces together that obviously do not go based on the color scheme. And then she said, Jill, you can use color. Color. And I thought, color? Color? What's color? And then it clicked and it's like, color. Oh, and then I could see color. And then it was like, oh, that makes the whole thing easy. I mean, who knew? Color. Yeah, I had to be taught color.
I had to be taught
color. We teach children. We teach newborns color.
That's right. And so you really were an infant
in
a woman's body.
Yes.
As you became more cognitive, as more things started to come back to you,
yeah.
your brain started to heal,
yeah.
you went into surgery, obviously, mm-hmm. and the surgery
yeah.
worked.
Right. Yeah,
here.
Surgery was good.
And as that happened, did you lose the oneness? When you came out of the surgery, mm-hmm. let's go to the surgery. You came out of the surgery, and then what happened? What did they actually do in the surgery?
In the surgery, they drill 3 holes, take a blob of bone out of my head, sucked out a blood clot the size of a golf ball, put the bone back on, and said, go home and heal. essentially. It's going to be 2 years before we know anything. And when I woke up later that day, there was a brightness. I felt bright again. I had been just totally flat affect, just dull. Happy, but dull. And once that blood clot was gone, I felt like, okay, my spirit, the energy of me, I feel like I can be enthusiastic about life again. So it doesn't matter. Whatever happens now doesn't matter because I feel like I'm me again.
Did you think that the me was Dr. Jill Taylor?
No, she was a long way away.
She was a long way away. You still didn't have an identification with an ego self.
No.
Yeah.
No. No, it was 2.5 weeks before the brain chatter started to come back.
Okay.
And it was like a slate that had been wiped clean. And so I didn't remember all of my science was gone. I had to learn to read from scratch. I had to learn to write from scratch. I had to learn all my science. I still had the picture. The right hemisphere thinks in pictures.
Yes.
So as the left hemisphere and the brain became more normalized again from the swelling, the pictures were there. I still remember what the abdomen looks like and the relationship between the bowel and the pancreas, but I didn't have any terminology. I had no language. So I had to learn language again, which meant I had to learn what my name was again, much less all my science and any relationship with
But even
tuna.
When you learn that this is your name, that still doesn't mean that you know that who you are, that that's an identification for you.
Because that person died. In my mind, that person died.
Mm-hmm.
And so in the absence of her, I was going to be somebody new. And I couldn't be held to whom she had been because she had been a Harvard brain scientist, and I couldn't hold myself to that. I had a big hole in my head. So she was gone. And
right.
We grieved her. We mourned the loss of her, but she was gone.
How did you grieve her?
We talked about it. My mom and my friends, my family, we recognized that we had to let the person whom I had been go. Because I wasn't her anymore. I didn't have any of her recollection of her life. I had none of her knowledge. I had none of her education. I had none of her memories. So was I her? No, I wasn't her anymore. And we needed to allow me the freedom to be and emerge as who I'm going to be now. And that was critically important for my ability to heal and recover.
So you let her go. At what point during this did you grieve?
Early.
Early.
Right. Yeah.
Right, because that is so important to know that you weren't trying to hold yourself to an expectation of who you had been.
No, she was gone. She was gone. I had no expectation of ever recovering her. I wanted to recover some of her skills, of course. I wanted to be able to speak again. I wanted to, with fluency again. I wanted to be able to read and write and have relationships in the external world again, but as a different character.
Did you then have to come to know Gigi, your mother?
Yes.
You came to know her in the new life, in the new birth of yourself.
Right.
Did you ever get to the point where you recalled those old memories?
After about 7 or 8 or 9 years, at that point, it was a good 8 or 9 years before I remembered items from my past that I know no one had taught me.
Mm-hmm.
So, but it took many, 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 many years.
So you basically had to relearn a self.
Exactly. I got reborn, essentially, if you will, and start from scratch, and here you go. What are you going to do with your second life? Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, what an opportunity. I mean, because think about it. I lost all my emotional baggage. On top of it, I lost all my pain. I lost any suffering I'd ever had. I lost all those memories. I lost it all, and I got to start fresh at the age of 37. Now,
wow.
Is that like freeing or what?
That is the most freeing thing. So
you
had no
I had no
It's unbelievable.
It was high, yeah.
There's no.
And I was real clear between what was my stuff and what was your stuff.
You were.
And it was fascinating because other people wanted to start dumping all their old stuff on me. It's like, no, I'm not playing that game anymore.
Well, okay, so let's say this again. All your garbage got wiped out in that left hemisphere.
Yeah.
So all of your old memories of pain and being wounded and.
Why do you think I was sitting on the couch with a big old smile on my face?
And the stuff that made you feel like.
Less than.
Less than. Mm-hmm. That's all the stuff that Eckhart Tolle in A New Earth has been talking about, how it really is just like that. You can let it go.
Yeah. Oh, peace is a thought away. It's a thought away, and you make that choice. It's your cognitive choice moment by moment.
He calls them in the book, it does a whole chapter on pain bodies. Mm-hmm. So you lost your pain body.
I lost my pain body. Yeah. and she wanted to recover a few years down the road. And I said, no.
Your pain bodies?
My pain bodies.
Really?
And I said, no, because I didn't like the way they felt in my body.
Wow.
I mean, think about what your pain body feels like in your body. It feels like pain. And I'm
so
sitting
you
here
were
consciously.
So you were so conscious in the right brain, to think in the right brain mind, that the pain was really a physical pain.
Oh, it's awful. It is. Your pain is physical pain. Just think about it. The next time you're experiencing...
Your emotional pain.
But it is. It grips you. You feel your chest tighten. You feel your brow furrow. You feel yourself get all tense. You feel that. And I just became hypersensitive to any of that physiology inside of my body, and I didn't like it.
So as you then are developing this new self,
yeah,
you have a choice,
right,
to either pick up the baggage,
right,
or not to pick up the baggage.
Exactly.
Or to create new baggage.
Exactly.
And so you chose not to create new baggage.
Exactly.
How did you know not to do that?
Well, I didn't like the way it felt in my body, so I chose not to run that circuitry. It's circuitry. It's all about circuitry. For example, you can think something that makes you feel sadness. And sadness has a physiological feeling in your body, and you, your throat tightens, and things happen inside of you physiologically. I didn't like the way that felt, so I just decided that wasn't circuitry that I was going to run anymore. So I said no to the circuitry. I said no. I just, you know, you have to remember that your brain's just a bunch of cells,
right?
And I look at the cells as a bunch of little children. And some little children I want to play with, and there are other little children who I don't really like what they do, and I'm going to say,
so
no,
you just
I don't
say,
want to,
I don't want to go there.
Exactly.
So
and
you,
anybody can do that.
So now you control your thoughts.
We all do. So right now you can stop and think about taxes. How did that feel in your body?
Not so
exactly
good.
Exactly. But you had the ability to consciously think taxes and have that experience. You have the ability to focus your mind on what you want to focus it on. So all I did was I recognized that these are things I don't want to focus on anymore. I don't want to put any energy into that circuit. The thing about cells is that the more you let them do what they do, the more they do it without you having to tell them to do it.
But what I find so interesting in the context of what we've been doing on the web with A New Earth is that Tolle always talks about how the past is just the past, and the past has no power over
no power.
The present moment of now.
That's right. None.
And when that physically happened to you,
mm-hmm,
it's wiped out, clean slate.
Yeah.
It means it no longer has any power.
None.
And so it was all literally just in your mind.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay, so let's go to the GGT.
So when you don't think about anymore, it doesn't exist.
Exactly.
Okay, let's go to the Gigi piece.
The Gigi thing. I mean, you think about the power between the mother-daughter relationship.
Right.
And if anybody's going to have any power in my life, it's going to be my mother.
Right.
Well, I didn't even know what a mother was, much less who my mother was. And I really liked this new entity, but she had none of her old power, which meant she couldn't coax me into doing anything the way that she used to be able to because
she's a mother. Right.
Because the game was different now. I changed the rules.
Oh, my God.
I took away her power.
This is so freeing.
That's the beauty of it.
Oh,
when you pay attention to what's going on in your own brain and you take responsibility for the circuitry you're running, you make the rules of a new game. And as soon as you change the way you interact with other people, the rules have changed and the game has changed. It demands change to happen.
Wow.
Yeah, it's beautiful. It's freedom.
It's freedom.
It's true freedom.
Now, have you been able to maintain that?
Yes.
You have?
It's been very important to me to do that. That's how I want to live
my life.
So
you never picked up the old baggage stuff again?
Never did? No.
You got a clean slate.
I got a clean slate, and I'm sticking to it. Now, that doesn't mean that I don't have stuff, because I've accumulated new stuff, because that goes with having a new left hemisphere. Because the left hemisphere is all about critical judgment, which is necessary
and it's also
to organize your life.
But also about what you think of me and all that. Are you able to maintain a perspective of...
Oh, I don't care what you think of me. You have no power over what I think of me. I know I'm as big as the universe.
Because you've been there and seen
yourself. Because I've been there and done that.
Yeah.
And now I'm here to help us figure out how to become more like that, more peaceful, to own our own power and to find our own peace. Because if I'm peaceful and I'm owning my power and you're peaceful and you're owning your power, What kind of power? How are we going to interact with one another? We're going to play together.
Right.
We're going to be respectful, and we're going to be creative, and we're going to figure out how to make humanity a healthy organism.
So nobody ever really ticks you off anymore? Are you able to put that in perspective?
I always enjoy it if somebody ever gets that far, uh-huh. because that's an extreme emotion for me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, but no, I take responsibility for my triggers, my emotional circuitry.
How do we get some of this, Dr. Bolte Taylor? How do we get some of this, Dr. Jill Bolte Taylor, without having to have a stroke?
Yeah, well,
You write about finding your own inner peace. How do we do it?
Well, I'm going to go straight to Eckhart Tolle's message and say, pay attention to what you're thinking. Pay attention to what you're thinking, and you are not your thoughts. Your thoughts are created by a tiny, tiny little group of cells about the size of a peanut sitting in your left hemisphere, and many of us let that little peanut rule our lives. And you have to recognize that it's just a group of cells that is designed to tell stories so that we feel safe in the external world. You are not your thoughts. So pay attention to what you're thinking, and then decide if those are thoughts that are creating the kind of life that you want created. And if it's not, then change your thoughts. It's really that easy.
It's really that easy.
It's really that easy.
Let's talk about some of the other things that you know that you needed. And you write a whole chapter, and I'm trying to find out where that is in the book, where you talk about what you needed most.
Yeah.
Yes.
The number one thing I needed the most was sleep. I needed people to recognize that my brain is a group of cells. And at this point, it wasn't about Jill Bolte Taylor. It wasn't about my identity or my ego or me.
Yeah.
It was about this is a collection of cells making up an organ. And in order for that organ to be able to thrive again, we had to figure out what the cells needed in order to get help. And they were on stimulation overload, and I needed to go to sleep. And I needed to put earplugs in, and I needed to turn the lights down low because noise coming in through my sensory systems was painful and overload. So the first thing I needed was sleep. And that is the one thing we really do not do in rehabilitation in our society. Individuals in a nursing home, if I'd have been placed in a nursing home, a traditional nursing home environment for rehab, I would have been given amphetamines at 6:30 or 7 in the morning to wake me up, and then I'd have been propped up with stimulation in my face. I'd been taken into a social environment because mm-hmm. they want you to interact like you're a normal person, and that would have given me every excuse in the world to say, this is pain. I'm going back to right hemisphere consciousness.
I want to have you join us again, and we want to talk about all of the things that we can do to help friends and family who might be in recovery.
Okay.
Also, how we begin to create this sense of inner peace for ourselves.
Okay.
In the chapter in the book, you call it tending your own garden.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, as the scientist who had the stroke, who was able to observe the whole thing for yourself,
mm-hmm.
and I'm reading about that going, well, that's all well and good, unless
right.
I take some kind of drug.
Right.
I don't know how we're going to reach that, and don't want to go through a stroke to
right.
experience it.
Yeah.
But what you're saying through mm-hmm. my stroke of insight is that we are able to access
mm-hmm.
that part of ourselves
right.
or brain
mm-hmm.
on a daily basis.
Yeah, it's going all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So based on your experience, you've made it your own personal agenda to help people liberate their own inner peace, joy, and their sense of magnificence, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we're so beautiful.
And your stroke of insight is?
It's a thought away. It's a choice. It's a thought away, and it's easy. It's really easy, and it's going on all the time. And all you have to do is teach yourself when you're there so that you can identify what it feels like inside of your body so that you can call on it at any time.
And that the way we access it is to silence the chatter in our minds.
Silence the brain chatter.
Silence the brain mm-hmm. chatter.
And that doesn't mean you have to work real hard to do that. That means focus your mind on the other parts. As soon as you think about something, you've distracted your mind away from the chatter. So just take responsibility for the thoughts that you're thinking and allow yourself to move yourself into the circuitry that brings you peace.
Okay, so in our final talk with Dr. Jill Bolte Taylor, we're going to talk about how her stroke of insight can be applied to our lives so that we can experience some parts of nirvana
mm-hmm.
in our daily lives.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
I hope you enjoyed this edition of our Soul Series. These are some of my favorite conversations.
To hear more, sign up for a free 30-day XM Radio trial by going to www.xmradio.com/Oprah.